This is Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.
I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join Trader Nick in the United States for the latest on the markets. Nick, good afternoon from London. Good morning to you.
Hey, Johnny. Good to be back with you.
Now, we haven't spoken for a few days, but the war in the Middle East continues. Oil and gas prices continue to rise sharply. Stock markets are down. And this crisis continues. Brent crude, I think you told me just a few moments ago, trading around about $109 a barrel. And all of this is having a massive effect on many other markets, precious metals, oil, stock markets, and so on, isn't it?
That's right, Johnny. And I think it is, it's true to the lessons of history, which is, you know, the market is pretty resilient on a lot of stuff. But the one thing that remains a very challenging thing for modern markets is shocks like COVID, the tariff tantrum of last year, and in this circumstance now, geopolitical shocks. These sorts of events are very hard for markets to see ahead of time. And when they occur, they can cause shock reactions across many different markets. I mean, I was just reflecting on this this morning, Johnny, thinking about how we turned into this year, 2026, thinking it was going to be a year of inflation finally getting beat and rates were going to come down globally, that we were going to finally have that kind of sense of normalcy. I mean, you and I were discussing, we were using that word during our podcast, like, hey, it seems like we are still on track for some normalcy in markets. And this powder keg of activity coming on with Trump administration or the joint U.S.-Israeli strikes into Iran have triggered some very interesting supply side issues into markets once more.
And it's interesting, as you said, Nick, it's history repeating itself because it's the same pattern we've experienced. Just when we thought we were going to get over the COVID crisis, then particularly here in Europe, we had the situation with the Russia-Ukraine war. Just when that seemed to calm down a bit, then we got into the tariff war. There hasn't really been a continuation of stability for what seems like decades.
That's right. And it's almost the new normal to an extent. It's like it's almost like a reality TV show. And I don't mean to undermine the severity of things going on, but rather there's always some new head-turning headline that's getting markets all riled up about something. Even in calm periods, a couple months ago, we were talking about AI disruption and how it's going to eat away at modern businesses that are solving problems that tomorrow will be solved by AI. So the market is always seemingly finding these narratives to worry about. And the question is it justified or not? And you know, the AI disruption story, I would say, I still kind of think personally from an anecdotal standpoint that I think that that is a little bit overblown fears, that I think AI will be a tool to leverage things, et cetera. But these sorts of events, geopolitical blowouts, uncertainty that very difficult to predict, I think is a persistent pressure on market mentality and a insistent one on inflation. And so the longer this goes on, I mean, we were just talking about this right before we started the podcast, Johnny. I'd love to hear more of your thoughts on this. The challenge here is not necessarily, even if we had some sort of ceasefire, right? If something stopped, there has been a lot of damage done on this to the supply of oil already.
Indeed. I've been reading commentators over the last few days saying, well, even if we get some sort of resolution to this, because of the attacks on oil refineries, on gas refineries, is going to have repercussions for years to come, not just weeks or months. And that, in a sense, is the worrying thing. We've almost taken it for granted that we're going to get this massive amount of gas from the likes of Qatar. We see the market controlled for many, many years through OPEC Plus and so on. But that was a luxury, in a sense. We're now in a position where we're not just worrying about the amount of oil which is put into the system by OPEC Plus, but whether we can actually get at it.
That's right. And, this ongoing situation, at least I disclaim, as I each time have done so with Middle East conflict, it is not my area of expertise, but my understanding of the scenario right now is that Iran is currently targeting many neighboring nations as a way to put pressure on the rest of the world. And what I've kind of understood about this is that the game is on in the sense that Iran is firing missiles, and from my understanding of how this technology works, the intercepting missiles that these places will shoot off to stop a missile from hitting a target, they shoot two for every one missile, and the second missile is or the second intercepting missile is kind of the insurance, right? If you're going to try and shoot something out of the sky, they'll throw out two interceptors. So the game is, or not really game, that's the wrong word, but the tactic here is that if Iran can fire more missiles than interceptors are available, and these are expensive technologies, by the way, right? These intercepting devices, that of, you know, what Israel has and what have Saudi Arabia, all these different nations have these ways to intercept these. Well, that is a cost to these local places and also a finite amount of supply. So is there's this worrying thing that there may be the need to start selectively choosing, if they run low on intercepting supply, which places to protect, and which is a very dire and very scary situation. And as you pointed out, you know, the missiles being shot at energy facilities, at these things, they're much easier to destroy these things than it is to build them. It takes a lot of time, lots of years of work to build these things, lots of invested capital to build these things. And so damage could be done in a way that is not something that will be resolved, even if there is a ceasefire. These things don't magically just repair themselves. These are real global supply of oil being disrupted.
And taking just Qatar as an example, which produces a fifth of the world's LNG, we've heard from Qatar Energy, which is the country's state-owned energy company, who said that the required repairs to the facility that had been damaged will reduce output by nearly 13 million tons of LNG for 3 to 5 years.
That's right. And that is why I kind of continue to err on the side of caution with markets here, because even if there is a resolution, there is damage that has been done. And who is to say that this is not something that goes on for weeks on end, months on end, and let's hope not for years on end, right? I mean, there have been many wars that have gone very long periods of time in the Middle East. I'm sure many people are familiar with that. And so the markets very much do not like that idea, because that is inflationary, that is disruptive to business in the region. That is, of course, always going to also put pressure on rates being higher, which has been, as we highlighted as we started the podcast here, painful for risk assets as a whole.
Now, Nick, as you said, we were expecting an interest rate cut had things been normal, but now we're getting commentators who are suggesting that interest rates might indeed go up this year. And that actually is having a major effect on precious metals, because we're seeing a fall in gold and silver prices.
That's right. And I'm looking at the FedWatch tool here. The December 9th meeting of this year, 2026, is expected here. It has, let's call it, a 35 to 45% chance that by that time, we may have possibly seen a rate hike. This is an entirely different scenario than we've been dealing with. As we discussed at the beginning of this podcast, starting out in 2026, we thought we were going to get rate cuts. Now, there's a possibility, in fact, a slightly leaning in favor of possibility of rate hikes by end of year. I mean, this is a dramatic shift. But of course, dealing with inflation, dealing with this unknown that we have with the geopolitics stuff, I mean, this is likely to remain very volatile. I would also, you know, encourage listeners to also think about how volatile everything here is. What I mean by that is that if there is geopolitical tensions that are relieved, that could change things to an extent as well to the other side. So very jumpy. Oil prices are likely to remain elevated this year. They could still come down, of course, if there is geopolitical relaxation in the region. But still, the possibilities of having 3-4 rate cuts this year has been diminished significantly. So very interesting shift in narrative there, and precious metals have been hammered because of it.
Okay, let's look to the week ahead. What should we look out for in the next few days?
Yes, so next week we have, of course, this weekend. Every weekend recently has been an unknown with what could happen next with the geopolitical story. But going into economic data next week, on Tuesday, we are going to be getting some PMIs out of Europe and the UK especially. Will be interesting, of course. I note those as separate because, the UK, not part of the European Union, but we do have ECB stuff coming out as well soon. We also have PMIs coming out for the US, and CPI will drop as well for the Australian. The RBA, of course, just recently hiking interest rates. Australian CPI will come out on Tuesday as well. Tuesday night, that'll be Wednesday morning for people in the APAC region. And if we take a look at Wednesday, that's going to be UK CPI early in the morning for me, but mid-morning for UK residents. And then also on Thursday, we have the standard unemployment claims for the US, retail sales on Friday, and some University of Michigan consumer sentiment numbers coming out on Friday as well.
Excellent stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll switch you again next week.
Thanks, Shani. See you then.
Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.